try, we're mindful of the fact that we've lost time, so we'll try and be as short as possible. But we've agreed to do, once I've done the intro, which will be very, very precise and short, the OPC will take you through the detail of the report, more on the performance side. The financial performance side will be dealt with by the CFO, and I'll just wrap up before we. But we'll still, between the three of us, will be as fast as possible. A lot of the things have already been raised, those issues that we have to do with between us and CEDA in the opening of the chapters and of CEDA. I would want to go back to that. We'll deal with it towards them when I wrap up. Perhaps the biggest highlight that I should indicate is on the performance, particularly the fact that of the 20 KPIs that CIFA had set itself for, 11 have been fully achieved, 5 have been partially achieved. But let me qualify that partially achieved, and we'll get it in slide 56 of the presentation. The 5 that have been partially achieved still would relate to a percentage performance of between 75% and 99%. So as we are dealing with issues of finance, one of the key things that we should highlight is the fact that the output in terms of performance basically has to be achieved over a period that can be achieved within 1 year. So we know the shortfalls that were there before, and the historical issues that are known in terms of the previous reports, and the issue around the state of the economy. Beyond the constraints that we know, we are aware of as the board of CIFA, the key issue that would also impact directly on performance, that has been impacting directly on performance, is the state of the economy itself. When the economy is not, it's like a chicken and egg thing, because we have a responsibility to contribute towards that very economic development through funding of small businesses. We are very conscious of that. At the same time, when the economy is not reforming itself, it has a constraint on the extent to which you can be able to make that impact. So I will basically, and I think I concur also just to emphasize the point that was raised by the chairperson of CEDA, that there's a new board. We are mindful of the fact that, first of all, we are new. Perhaps worse for us is that the current board started really convened its first meeting towards the end, in fact, towards the end of early September. So this is our second month in office. So we're trying to respond as fast as possible. But equally, we know we are successors in title as a board, and therefore we take full responsibility for the performance of the previous years. Ours is to focus on how can we effectively improve moving forward. So I'll hand over to the acting CEO to focus. And again, it's a very long presentation that has been forwarded to you. He will highlight on the key issues that are important for this meeting, and would supplement that with a presentation on finance, as I've indicated, then I'll wrap up finance. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair Ms. Wella. I think let me say that a protocol is observed. Deputy Minister Papa, welcome. Let me quickly, I think, at the backdrop of what the Chair has already said, go through the presentation. You know, I always say when you are having a sea of problems, irrespective of the amount that you do, as somebody said, it's like taking a bottle of water and pouring it in the sea. One doesn't see that, but we are indeed aware that this particular department and the agencies under it are central to ensuring that we kickstart economic activity in this country. And I must say that we are up to the challenge, and we are doing everything else in our power to make sure that we don't disappoint. Therefore, just going through next slide, Hugh. This particular slide, I think the mission vision, I believe that we still leading catalyst for development of sustainable SMEs and cooperatives. And indeed, our biggest clarion call is to ensure that we provide finance. Access to finance is key to all what we are doing. Next slide. The lending models that SIFA uses are the three channels where we provide funding through the direct, the wholesale, and the credit, a guarantee scheme that has been known as CULA guarantee scheme, and the thresholds and the amount that we provide are as listed in the slide. Now, the operational footprint of SIFA is that we have got around 82 access points, and the CEO of CEDA mentioned the fact that everywhere where they are, we have got co-location. This augurs well with the minister, I think, call that says we need to ensure that we are available throughout the country. I just want to also mention the fact that through our specialized, you know, we've got 24 specialized access that are provided through our strategic funding partners. These are your microfinance institutions, the RFI, which we have not included in this map as well. And then when I move to the main business funding, I think the summary of all of this is that we are providing funding, you know, through the direct, so we provide what I would call self-liquidating, you know, instruments. And the targeted ownership groups, you know, is as per definition where we have got your youth, your women, black people, townships, rural areas, people with disabilities, and we provide funding across all the sectors of the economy. The strategic differentiation for us, I believe, is that we need to address market failure. If someone goes to a commercial bank and they get the same treatment that they get at SIFA, we need to sharpen our pencil and make sure that we provide the right type of product. I think one of the things that I always say we don't measure is this issue around moratorium. That when a project is being built, SIFA has the ability to adapt to the timing by ensuring that we provide some relief to the entrepreneur by providing what we call a moratorium. If you go to a commercial bank, you know, they give you a loan from month number one, they start debiting your account. And I think the other one is addressing the financing gap. The economy has indicated that around 80 billion rand is actually a gap for loans that are from 500,000 and below. And therefore, SIFA, with a balance sheet of 2.5 billion, has got a mammoth task of ensuring that we go a long way in addressing this. The other thing that I believe we should mention is the issue of providing the pre- and post-loan support to entrepreneurs at no cost to those entrepreneurs as well. And maybe lastly is the fact that our lending is not solely based on security banks backing. We look at the cash flows, and once we are satisfied that the business has the ability to service the obligation, we will then go and provide a funding. Maybe quickly, these are just our group structure, and without going through them, as the details are in the report as well. Now, in every organization, I believe that we need to ensure that the roadmap that we provide addresses some of the challenges that we are having. So since SIFA's inception, I am glad to report that, you know, around 5.6 billion rand in 7 years have been approved, where we have dispersed more than 6.8 billion. It is still not enough. And just under 360,000 businesses were funded, and over 400. And I think it is important to mention that many of these jobs are really in the informal and your micro enterprises. And that is why you see the ratio of almost 1, you know, to 1.1. But the performance highlights, the next slide of the 2018-19, as the chair said, if you go to, you know, slide, you know, 52 to 56, that's where you will see the details around the variances, is that we approved 703 million and we dispersed 1.2 billion. I think one may say, how do you do that? The 1.2 billion is dispersed through a number of revolving facilities that we have with our funding partners, where once we have given them money, they have the ability to revolve the money between 2 times to about 3.5 times. Just under 73,000 businesses were funded, and then 88,600 jobs facilitated. We still need to ensure that we disperse more to the youth-owned businesses, and the chair at the end will talk about some of the interventions that government has come up with to make sure that this particular area, considering the unemployment rate amongst young people, is addressed. And then 481, you know, for the year to women-owned, and then just under 900 million to black-owned businesses. And then also the 375 million to your productive sector. Maybe just the funding activities for the year. As I mentioned, we have got our wholesale direct, we've got the cooler credit guarantee, but we also measure what we call the informal sector, which is more your, you know, your micro, your informal, and you know, and mostly these are, you know, you're finding them in the rural areas. And I think it is important to mention that with our collaboration with SIDA, we are going to ensure that this minimal activity to support cooperatives should actually be, you know, taken up. However, it is also important for me to hasten to say that some of our funds that we have, like Akwanze in the Mpumalanga area, where we support sugar cane growers and through Tonga, most of them are accessing our facilities through, you know, groups of cooperatives, which I believe we should also be showing so that the number, you know, is reflective of what we do in that area. But when we say cooperatives, it's those that just approach CIFA as individual, whether primary or secondary. The spatial development impact in terms of disbursements, because we measure how much money has gone into the economy, because that's the only way we can measure impact, is that as it is shown there. I think it is maybe important to make mention of the fact that Gauteng indeed, as the economic hub, will still take the lion's share, but we are glad to say that some of the outlying provinces are showing great strides in taking up, because of the number of partners that we are having in those, like your you know, Small Enterprise Foundation, the Pagamani of this world, and Forward Finance. So that's what we have done in the financial year 2018-19. And maybe just the operational performance per, you know, lending channel, without repeating ourselves, it is as it is shown there in terms of how much we have approved through the direct lending. I believe that one of the most important things that we need to mention is the issue of the improved financial sustainability. We really bled terribly, hemorrhaged badly around this lending when opportunities were given to, you know, entrepreneurs, where we supported them. But I'm glad to mention the fact that we have now since started taking sessions, and government departments are responding, you know, positively in ensuring that we can secure some of the funding that we provide. And I think importantly, we also need to enhance operational efficiencies and effectiveness in this area as well. And maybe as I go to the next slide, is that the 39% increase in approval of 272, I believe more can still be done if you go to slide 20. And the other thing as well is we have partners. Sorry, should this slide be? Yes? 18, my apology. That we have partnered as well with the Pick and Pay, which resulted in this 60 million facility for investment in the township. This will go a long way in ensuring that we have got, you know, deepen our involvement in the rural areas, villages and townships. And the other one is we also have developed a sector-focused, you know, investment strategy, where we want to ensure that we are just not all over the shop, but can develop speciality within CIFA in making sure that we address some of the challenges that we see in the sectors of the economy that we need to support. Maybe going forward, I will not talk through this. There are highlighted in the annual report some of the examples, but I believe honourable members, you know, can do bedtime reading. Let me go to slide number where we talk about the informal as well, which is slide 30. The informal sector, Honourable Deputy Minister, I think it is important for us to mention that we do go to rural areas and the villages. I think it's our mandate to make sure that we do that, and maybe to even highlight, if you go to the next slide, that 99.8% of the businesses that were supported were women-owned businesses, and these are primarily in the rural areas. And we have seen a 32% growth in the amount that we have dispersed to the micro enterprises compared to the previous year. And we provide this funding through a number of microfinancing institutions and partnerships that we have. And we are really glad to mention the fact that we are making inroads, but I believe that more can still be done as well. I mean, one of the other highlights was where we were supporting micro enterprises at the Mangaung fresh produce market to say, how can we help these women that wake up in the wee hours of the morning to go and buy the fresh produce? And we have models that, and we believe more can still be done in that area. The wholesale lending, and maybe just to go to the highlights or on slide 33, is that this is where we fund through intermediaries and special, you know, specialized funds. That obviously share CIFA's objectives of increasing access to finance to your SME. And we do this and by ensuring that we crowd in financial and business support. Because one of our objectives is to ensure that we crowd in private sector money through leveraging on our limited resource in order to touch as many businesses as we can. So we have developed an in-house fund management capacity to deliver third-party funds. And I think some of the funds that I just want to mention is the European Union 30 million euro that is going to be called employment promotion through SMME support. We will also be, you know, we are already starting to launch, roll out the Small Business and Innovation Fund, which will be a fund that will be rolled out through the 3-year MTEP period. And this fund is geared, I believe, towards young people. The minister mentioned during, the budget vote that 100,000 youth-owned businesses need to be supported. And through this fund and many other channels within SIFA, we are going to ensure that we rise up to that particular call. And some of the clients that we have funded are shown from slide number 35 to slide 40. The next element is the cooler credit guarantee performance. And this is where we extend, coverage of our activities through commercial and other non-financial, partners, where SIFA provides between 50% up to 80% guarantee on the loans that would be taken by the SMMEs. And this addresses some of the elements I mentioned right at the beginning of no collateral by some of our, our industries. So if one looks at slide 42, you will see that we designed this to ensure that the commercial banks and non-banking institutions, we indemnify them from potential default by SMME. It is our role to make sure that we address the market failure. And the South African financial system, contains, I believe, a highly developed and well-capitalized banking sector, which caters mainly for the advanced segments of the economy. So this particular instrument ensures that those SMEs that do not have the ability to individually approach commercial banks can be given an opportunity And what we do, you know, as I say, ordinarily, is we provide a number of products. Some of them we call them the, you know, the portfolio guarantee, where we will guarantee a particular portfolio so that the commercial bank or the non-banking institution can provide loans to SMEs. And in the financial year 18-19, an amount of 210 million against a target of 82 were actually granted to the institutions. And I think it is important to mention that majority of those loans were provided in the agribusinesses and the SME sector. So they've taken up levels of 135 through the supply credit guarantee, which, you know, accounted for 67% of the total, was actually taken in the same year as well. Now, as an institution, we have a mandate not only to provide funding, but to also ensure that we support the SMEs. Because just providing money is not the solution. And therefore, we have got a dedicated department called Post-Investment Monitoring, Workout and Restructuring. And this department ensures that you have got a targeted approach of ensuring that we address the, you know, the challenges of SMEs by deploying industry specialists through a number of, you know, mentors throughout the whole country. We have got around 180 mentors throughout the whole country. But importantly, our role is to make sure that we collect money. And I'm glad to announce that in the past year, we collected 347 million from a target of 365. This just fell short of the previous year, you know, where we actually collected, you know, just around 400 million. But I think this in total is contributing towards this total 1.9 billion rands that I have talked about right at the beginning. And I believe this is a vote of confidence in saying that some of the things and strategies that we have employed are starting to yield results. So if you allow me, Chair, I will now just hand over to the CFO to briefly just take us through the financial snapshot. But in a nutshell, this is what I believe CIFA, you know, has to deliver in the 18-19 financial year. And once more to reiterate, we are up to the challenge because we realize that there is a need that we need to do in order to make a difference in the country. Thank you.
Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, Chairs and CEOs of institutions, good afternoon. Chair, CIFA has been on a path to financial sustainability over the last 6 years and has managed to turn around its financial position. CIFA has had for 6 and 7 years consecutive years had an unqualified clean audit since its inception. Our other highlights is on the direct lending model, which previously used to attract 70 cents for every rent disbursed we used to incur credit losses of 70 cents. This has decreased dramatically, and you will see in the last financial year, we have been attracting impairment losses or credit losses. I'm on page 45 for the members. We have been attracting credit losses of 28 cents or 28% for every 1 rand disbursed. This has been a reduction from 79 cents, which we used to incur losses in 2015. We have also managed to contain our costs, both operating costs and personnel costs, and this can also be seen on slide 47. Where you will see that our personnel costs and operating costs have been contained, and this has been through a lot of initiatives that the agency has undertaken in the last 5 years, including headcount freezes and lower than inflation salary increases. We have also managed to beef up our financial position. The CEO has already mentioned that we've been able to raise 30 million in terms of our European Union facility and a further 3 billion through the Small Business Innovation Fund facility with approximately 700 million which will be other achievement, honorable members, is on our investment properties, which FIFA in the last 7 years has been bleeding excessively, resulting in approximately 86 million rands that was actually incurred in 2017. You will see that FIFA has embarked again on serious cost containment in terms of this portfolio. We have been able to reduce year on year the costs and investments on the investment properties to approximately 28 million year on year. We have also managed to reduce our reportable irregularities and surplus expenditure from 4 million rands that was reported in 2017.
Sorry, Chairperson, can I request that the CFO just mention on which slides they are, because I'm going up and down.
On page 45. The last bullet on slide 45 is the one where we're discussing the reportable irregularities, where we have managed to reduce the fruitless and wasteful expenditure from 4 million in 2014 to 16,000 in 2019. We have nevertheless also incurred some challenges despite those highlights that we have indicated, honorable members. We are obviously working around a low growth macroeconomic environment, which the CEO has also alluded to, and this has obviously resulted in an impairment coverage ratio of 47% and also a negative loan growth. CIFA has been incurring a decline in our loan book year on year, and this is obviously because of the historical reasons that we've just given up. We, a few years ago, honorable members, for every rent FIFA was dispersing, we were incurring a 79 cents credit loss. Obviously, FIFA, as mentioned previously, even though has impact on the impairments, we've arrested the impairment growth. And yes, in the current year and also in the last 3 years, we have contained the increase in impairments, but nevertheless, it has resulted in our loan book deteriorating year on year. We are, though, on a path of growth now, and this reduction in the impairment growth will be reduced year on year. So our efforts in terms of our credit lending policies and credit lending methodology, which we've embarked on in the last 3 years, and the CEO has also alluded to the fact that we are now looking at sector specific approvals and many other initiatives that have been counted for, will see this book turning around, and we are seeing the results of the efforts that we've done. We aim to cover our costs. So our cost to income ratio, we are targeting 100, meaning that we should be generating enough income to cover our costs, and that ratio should really be 100%. We are still at 106, so not too far from our 100% target. We are slightly above that target. And again, due to the decline in our loans and advances year on year as a result of the credit losses that we have in the previous years, the interest income that we were able to generate as a result because of the deterioration in the book, it had been declining. Chair, I will leave it there, and we'll really just go quickly on the other slide. We have discussed the cost-to-income ratio, which has is slightly above 100, and again, you will see the accumulated impairment ratio due to the historical book is still remaining high. On the second slide, we have already discussed one of the main points there. The interest income has declining year on year. We've also seen the impairment ratio, though still high, there has been significant, and I'm on page slide 47 check for other members. The impairment ratio has declined significantly from 2016, where it was sitting at 337, and you will see that in the 2019 audited financial results, it's sitting at 133. again showing all the efforts that management has put in place in terms of arresting impairments. Personal expenses and other operating expenses we've already discussed have remained stable over the 5 years despite inflation and rising costs. I will leave it there, members, and we'll go back to the give it back to the CEO in terms of performance objectives.
Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think let me leave it because already the chair, the chairman has mentioned, you know, how many of our key performance indicators have been achieved, and then leave it to him to make the closing remarks, and then we will take the inputs from members. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In short, just build on that. The slide 52 to 56 breaks down that 20 that I was talking about on KPIs. That's where the details are in terms of where we've achieved, where we've partially achieved, and so on. I guess the key question that we need to also focus on would be what then becomes of CIFA going forward, especially also that we are a new board. As we reported in our last session, we will be going into our stress test session at the end of this month. Our understanding is that we definitely have to respond to the priorities of the fiscal administration, make sure that we run faster, conscious of the fact that as a board, we are an interim board. So we should lay a very sound foundation that can in fact be built on going forward once the permanent board has been appointed going forward next year. Secondly, is to plug on the shortfalls of previous performance of the organization that relates to, for example, the issue of impairments that has been responded to, noting that indeed there's been improvement, but surely we should also build on that and reduce impairments as much as possible. Being aware still at the same time that we are in a sector or an environment that one would call a bit experimental. With SMMEs, there's always a high risk that you might in fact incur impairments, especially in a case where the economy itself is not performing that well. In the last session, the other issue that was raised, which was reflected in our report, was around the geographical spread or equitable access to funding by SMEs across the country, and especially the focus on the provinces. We picked that up as an issue that we have to respond to, just to highlight some of the view, some of the issues. Given our sense is that the call for increased focus and emphasis of support to the SME sector in the country, CIFA itself can't do that without looking at its own performance capacity. Part of what we already started engaging on is how can we bring in a bit of fix within the organizational structure of CIFA to reposition it to respond to the growing demand or growing pressure that are in fact placed on it and resource that organizational structure accordingly. A point was raised much earlier relating to, I think it was Honorable Deputy Minister that raised it, relating to the resources that we inherited as an organization and how do we, through reskilling or through natural attrition, make sure that the headcount at CIFA does in fact give us an efficient, robust organization that can perform in its mandate. The other question relates to going forward, strengthening our route to market. The Honorable Minister raised a lot of questions around the use of around the use of intermediaries. We are conscious of the fact that we, first of all, have to make sure that even though we recognize that intermediaries do give us broader reach and faster reach in terms of access to finance, making it possible for us to dispense the resources that are allocated to CIFA, we need to strategically make sure that we get a better balance between direct lending and open lending. Of course, we can't do that without increasing the visibility of CIFA. We've listened, we've heard very clearly that CIFA is not necessarily as visible out there as people would want it to be. So post the third plan, you will begin to see
changes that will point to the direction that FIFA will be taking on that front, increasing visibility and increasing access. And the issue about distribution points, strategic and special, as it has indicated by the CEO, does need to be re-emphasized. But the other issues about using the digital platforms. If we are to reach out to the number of youths that we've been called upon to reach to, we should be alive to the fact that quite a number of them, despite the constraints of access to data and the cost of data in the country, are very digital. And we have to be creative in terms of platforms that we use. So there's a balance, there will be a balance between physical presence of FIFA and other creative or digital platforms that we can use to make it possible, especially for youth and small enterprises to access funding. From the governance side, I've already said we are very conscious that we're an interim board, but equally the other question that we have to raise is the concern that that has been raised with us, that anyway naturally should be embedded in our conscience as a board, that relates to performance monitoring. How good are we as a board that in year we continuously monitor the performance of the organization and putting up the system to make sure that we do not wait until we have an annual report to present, to ensure that we present a better report on the performance of the organization. Tied to that is strengthening risk management, which will also deal with the issue around the impairments and other risks that could be identified. The other question relates there's a current call that has been made around how do we build an integrated and seamless SME ecosystem. We are conscious that we have taken the organization strategy towards that direction. Tied to that is collaboration with the CEDA. The chairperson of CEDA has already spoken to that. We promised in our last interaction that we have started formalizing the engagement with already exchanged documentation on where we believe we should in fact be strengthening that collaboration. We still anticipate that before the end of this month, we would have had, call it a task team for lack of a better word, so a small focus group between the two boards and also integrating the staff, executive staff, the leadership organization at an administrative level to engage in more detail and produce a much more clearer program, call it a program of action or focus program, which would be CIFA, I think it's timely in that that engagement is coming as we are going to our strategic plan. So when you see the strategic plan, the next strategic plan, it would embed, it would integrate in it that very collaboration that we're talking about. But beyond that, I think given the environment that we operate in, it's not only about CIFA. We are conscious of the fact that for CIFA to succeed, it's not about only about CIFA, I mean to say. For CIFA to succeed, it is very critical that we look at building partnerships with entities, whether it be public or private, that have a direct bearing on the work that we do. Whether commonalities, strike those partnerships, put up programs, even if it's funds that we put in place to make sure that we're able to address the reach that is required. And tied to that, it becomes a bit sensitive if we're not very aligned. If CIFA is going to be visible, you can't only talk about what you do in terms of its marketing, what you do in terms of its presence across the country. You would have to have a much more focused stakeholder engagement program, whether with organized formations or with government entities or government, whether it be municipalities and so on, without necessarily encroaching on the work that the minister and rather the political leadership as a whole, be the president or the minister or the deputy minister or any other government department that interfaces with us. So without encroaching that, we have a responsibility as a board, recognized and management, to make sure that we build those partnerships and we reach out and engage and mobilize, not only reach out and engage, but also mobilize the sector, the partners and stakeholders that we play. Of course, lastly, it is easy to be complacent and say FIFA has maintained clean audit since its inception. I guess going forward is not only about attaining clean audits, it's also about making sure the quality of those outcomes improves sustainably going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I will now allow session for deliberation from honorable members. Yes, the presentation well detailed. And thank you so much. You have tried your best. It seems as if you have been there for 2 years. Appreciate it. Keep it up. Honorable members, please let's stick to the report. Mission the page so that they can be able to liaise with one another since they are a team. The chairperson will advise us who's taking what. Can I invite him, please? Let's go. Honorable Famela, number 2. 3, honorable address, that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We are very comforted by your words that we have a new minister, a new deputy minister, a new board, and we've already seen some good governance by the new board, and even some new leaders on the administration. However, we've listened to the auditor's report, and we've listened to the entity that the Constitution requires to also be the hawks, if I can use that. We also know that there are plans that SHIFA and SHIDA must be one entity. We also know as a mass position that we must go further, and SHIDA and SHIFA must be the department of small business development. I cross words with my colleagues in the ANC that he felt we need the 250 admin people who are just transferers. But coming back to the report, I disagree with the view that, you know, we are hampered because the economy is as it is. That is why a small business development entity has been created, so they economy not performing must not be used as an excuse for not creating jobs. 50,000 jobs per year, so we need 50 years and not 11 years to reach 2030 and 11 million jobs. So maybe the NDP, there must be another NDP for 2070. I like the observation by one of the presenters that when it comes to micro business and small business development, 90% are women owned and businesses which are successful in micro enterprises. I can identify with that because as part of a postdoctoral study in Indonesia, we found 6 million women who were doing quite well as a result of being assisted by a small business development, largely through microfinance. A study we did at universities over 5 years also showed that women are better than men as entrepreneurs. So maybe when we lend, maybe we must lend more money to women than to men. And these women in Indonesia came from the poorest of the poor areas. Now there are also poor areas in our urban areas, so Madam Chair, we must not only focus on the rural areas, we must remember that even in the urban areas, there are poor areas. SHIFA is a department and has agency under it to create 11 million jobs. The interest rate, if it is above 3.5%, you're not helping small business to thrive. It's a non-starter. That's why small business development growth, South Africa is right at the bottom. So we are doing something wrong. And we need to look at more interest-free years. 6 billion in 6 years to create 11 million jobs. It's like a Mickey Mouse operation if we look at the figures. We're not going to achieve the 11 billion jobs with these statistics. So it is unfortunately a poor show, but like I said at the beginning, the fact that we have new kids on the block, new blood, Deputy Minister, we are looking forward to you giving leadership so that we have a small business development department that will create 11 million jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to start on slide number 5, where it talks of the lending model. I just want to check if there is a target in terms of each model that the CIFA intended to achieve. Did they achieve it, or how can they explain it? Because I do understand. I remember in one of the meetings I asked the difference between the direct and the wholesale lending, but I want to check if there is a target for each lending model. The second question, Chair, will be, in CIFA's view, given the visibility challenges as indicated, that there are 82 access points, are 82 access points sufficient to cover especially the areas that are not covered by commercial bank, according to them? Is those 82 access points sufficient enough to cover the areas that are not covered by commercial bank? But the other question is, how is it the direct lending, it looks like it's more costly than the intermediaries. What is it made it to be more costly than the intermediaries? And then what was the 150 million used for? That also appeared on the same slide. The last question will be, Chair, what is CIFA planning to do, especially in improving its performance, particularly on meeting the youth targets? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think the quality of our questions will many times determine the quality of the answers that we receive. When we can learn to focus our questions on to get quality answers, we might get a lot out of the department, as we are not here to shoot the departments down, but rather to work in unison with these departments to ensure that we deliver to our people. I've got one thing in particular that I would like to bring up, CIFA, and it is only but one point. In my view, the apartheid legacy that has held the black child out of the mainstream of the economy is seriously being attacked by the work that you do, and for that we must give you acknowledgement and appreciation. However, I am a little bit concerned about the pick and pay model that we hear about. We don't hear you talk about numbers and the impact that it's having. One would like to hear what is the kind of impact that it has and who is the targeted beneficiaries, where are they? We have learned previously that there's nothing happening in provinces like the Northern Cape, for instance, where there is a high unemployment rate and so forth. Is there plans to ensure that we look at the small dorpies and towns also with these programs that CIFA has got? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. And one must say we note the presentation by CIFA. My one is a two-fold question. The first one would be my understanding, my little knowledge is most of the entities. They are audited by AG. If I'm not mistaken, CIFA is audited externally. So why is that so? And the second one, if I'm not mistaken, from the presentation as well, you were informed that the target for female entrepreneurs was about 103 million. And what was achieved was 36 million. And what are the reasons maybe being behind the not reaching the target? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm largely covered. I also want to appreciate our appreciation for the
for the work, for the achievements that FIFA has made. I think you have alluded to the loan approval underperformance, and I think that's the area that I just wanted to elaborate on that, because what it picks up is that most of the beneficiaries are on the old book, and so you haven't really improved, given, and I think you've alluded to the economy and all of those things, but what are you going to do going forward around that? And then the funding intermediaries, it was brought to our attention that through the process, there's no value add of these intermediaries. They often charge the receiver a bigger interest than you would charge them. And so what is the value add in that? And if we're going to, what's the policy position going forward? Will we continue with the intermediaries? Because you see what we're picking up, our opinion is that there's a lot of leakages and they don't add particular value to the process. I think the woman question and also the AG question is covered by my colleague, so thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I will now request the chair to respond.
Thank you, Honorable. I will try and respond in chronology to who asked the question first. The first point around the headcount. In my closing input, when we made the presentation, we specifically highlighted the fact that although it was not in the presentation of the annual report per se, that we are conscious of the fact that the numbers are high, that they may not necessarily reflect the numbers that we require, but also to highlight to the August staff that first of all the issue is historical. So when we talk about rejigging the structure, we're talking about aligning it to the strategy that we want to make up going forward. But of course, if, for instance, we get out of that exercise and the analysis says out of the 200-odd, we're supposed to be sitting with 180, we would have to come out with strategic interventions in the confines of the laws of the country on reducing those numbers. It may not be an immediate reduction. It may be something that happens gradually, maybe through natural attrition or not necessarily in reduction. Perhaps if we come up with a model that requires us of having more warm bodies in external offices other than the head office of CIFA, we would have to see who do we distribute out there to respond without discarding the obligation on our part to build partnerships and to coexist with CIDA and other formations at a local level. So we were raising it as a point of emphasis going forward. We acknowledge that is an issue that we're dealing with, recognize that as the first point. Secondly, we are not on the economy, we are not using the economy as an excuse, Honorable Hendricks, through your chair. All we are saying that there would be a number of factors, the interplay of factors would have these constraints. Some of the constraints would be internal, some of the constraints would have the economic constraints. Without preempting the outcome of the strategy, one of the debates that we've been having in CIFA relates to, first of all, the funding limits. Right? Is it proper for us to say, for instance, our limit should be 5 million across the board, first of all? Secondly, can you really have a blanket position that relates, first of all, to the funding requirements of one enterprise? Because some enterprise, whether it be a startup or an enterprise that is seeking expansion finance, you would have to look at what point in terms of the funding of that entity, would that entity be able to reach break-even point and become sustainable going forward. So you can't necessarily say 5 million is a limit. So you might have to look at per sector, for instance, these are four that we have in per sector. Perhaps the average threshold to reach break-even and sustainability point, depending of course on the kind of enterprise and market that is located, it might be that in tourism, if you want to put something, that, and according to perhaps the level of the grade, I'm just giving an example, it makes sense that you put that limit at this threshold. So those are things, these ideas that we're beginning to deal with. It is just one point. And of course, the like I said earlier, the question is what comes first? Are we going to use CIFA funds to trigger, to stimulate economic growth in a local state? Or are we going to use CIFA funds to support economic growth that has potential in a particular state? And perhaps in a way, that would also talk to the question that we thought we came to, that I'll talk to later, that the Honorable Ethel raised around going to the small brokers. The point that Honorable Henry Pruich raised on development income, I take it to be a compliment, so perhaps it doesn't require us to respond. The CEO would respond to the issue around development impact in particular the issue around women and whether we've achieved our targets or not. The cost of money issue, we are alive to that, as Honorable Henry Share raised. The minister has put a lot of emphasis, I guess, not only in engagement with CIFA, but perhaps on other platforms, that if the state is to provide funding, it doesn't make sense that it provides funding at a cost that would make it unsustainable for small business to be able to thrive. So part of what we intend to impose, for lack of a better word, on, for instance, the intermediaries, is that if we grant you funding as this, you can't pass on the cost to the people that you're lending to. Those are things that are being refined, that are being finalized as we go towards the launch of the Small Business Innovation Fund. The issue around number of increasing the number of jobs that we create, I think you make a very important point. Our understanding that that's why we emphasize that CIFA is allocated an amount of X. The issue on increasing the number of jobs would relate not only to funding but also relate to market access for those enterprises and the kind of partnership and creativity that you put in place and the funding instruments that you put in place. So we are aware of that. We know that there's a mandate we've been given, we have to do X. What we know in the long term is that for the ecosystem as a whole, the emphasis is not even on, let's say, the 11,000 jobs that you're talking about, 11 million jobs that you're talking about, but rather on what is going to be the future impact of the SME sector in contribution to the GDP. So we already have set our sight on that strategic level of engagement. And we have made a clearance call to the staff at CIFA that if in the past you felt limited in terms of how big you should dream, you need to understand that you have to take in, all heavens must be off. When we engage at the end of this month, at our second, we'll be looking at robust, very bold initiatives that we can put. Even if there are funding constraints, we should be able to say, we want to go there, at least go to the political principal and say, the funding will still not be enough, but we believe for it to work, it must go to that, at that level. So we understand it will be a multifaceted kind of intervention that we have to make from a strategy point of view. I hope I've been able to address the questions and comments that the Honorable Henry Pruich Chair. I will leave the question that was raised by the Honorable Somelang on lending models to be dealt with by the CEO. Equally, the issue on access points and why direct lending is expensive and what was the 150 million used for. Basically, most of the questions that the Honorable Somelang raised. At the last engagement, Honorable Chair, and I'm coming to the point that Honorable April raised, we highlighted the pick and pay model as a model that we were piloting. So we piloted the target that CIFA had already set for itself was looking at an initial set of 15 enterprises. The uptake has not yet been full, and it targeted particularly mainly at the moment at the township enterprises. What is pleasing is to report that in instances where the deals have been made,
And just to emphasize, you recall in our last interview, we indicated that the pick and pay model or the pick and pay experiment, if you want to call it, the partnership also in its provision provides a grant for those enterprises. And we focusing particularly on existing enterprises, by the way. So you'd find a local entrepreneur who would be facing a lot of pressure from either the foreign owned partners and so on in a local township, who would, I'm just throwing around figures just to give you a sense, would for instance be employing at the time before when we intervened, let's say about 10 employees. When we get into that, when we intervene in that particular enterprise, the results have proven that not only are they able to increase the revenue, they are also able to increase the number of jobs that they create at a very sustainable pace. But you would also recall, Honorable April, that one of the things that we raised was that Pick and Pay is an experiment. We have access to other partners that we believe we should be spreading that to, your MassMart and so on. But what is very interesting is that you probably know about the Pick and Pay family stores. That not, the model that you're talking about is totally different from that. It's not a franchise that is entered into by the entrepreneur, but rather call it an ESG kind of a support mechanism, where even in terms of branding, the dominant brand that is there in that shop remains Potita Supermarket. So Pick and Pay is just reflected there as a partner together with the department in supporting that enterprise to reposition itself. The small towns issue, Tom, and you know, engagement with CIFA, one of the things that we you know, within CIFA, one of the things that I think that torment us or that confront us, all of us, is how do we respond to the national imperative without ignoring the dynamics of a particular regional economy, regional space. It is a very complex question that we have to deal with. My understanding is that even if you're to, before you go to POFADA, you can't just go and drop $100,000 in POFADA. You must have some sense of understanding of what is the shape of the economy of POFADA. So that when you say, if you receive applications from POFADA, and one is in agriculture, the other one is in tourism, you need to make a differentiation and say, what is driving the economy of POFADA? Should you give priority to the tourism one? Should you give priority to the agriculture? So which relates to sustainability? Because if you plant your seed where there's a better chance of germination and growth, then you are able to create a multiplier effect. Because if that one enterprise is sustainable, then you are able to attract, to bolster the growth of other associated economies in that local space. Honorable Langa's question, Honorable Chair, I will leave it to the CFO to respond to on auditing. Although, as I said, the CEO will respond to the issue about reaching female targets, or women targets, one of the two. I think I've pointed, Honorable Jacobs, that the question on the veil of intermediaries, we are aware, firstly, of course, that historically the expenses would in fact be seen as a critical point of limit. The point that we emphasize is that the experience, especially in the micro enterprise and cooperative sector, those intermediaries have given us a lot of reach in terms of numbers, the development impact that they've been able to make, but also the sustainability of the enterprises that have been funded. We recognize ECON, that, and hence I spoke about capping. The cost that if we are to engage, and by the way, maybe we should emphasize, when we're talking about engaging in the future rounds, we are not going to be necessarily, we are not looking at exclusively engaging the intermediaries that we already deal with. Within that very space of intermediaries, there's space for empowerment of previously disadvantaged groups. So new intermediaries, we believe, should in fact be given an opportunity to come into the space. At the same time, making sure that we move towards a better equilibrium between what we do in direct lending and what we do in wholesale lending. So that is our understanding going forward. So it's perfecting the model, let's call it the staff rider concept. So as you come in, as you
stabilizing the system that you inherit, you look at what are the creative spaces within which you could bring new energy and probably veer, not veer off rather, you know, kite further branches for you to be able to make a better impact within the system. Over to you, Sierra. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to really touch on a few things so that we can close this. Maybe the other issue, Honorable Hendricks, that I need to mention on the interest rate. The Minister has made it clear that during the sixth administration, together with the Deputy Minister, government should be about policy and deploying of funds should actually go to the agency. So one of the things that is going to be happening is what we call the blended finance model. Now, the blended finance model is earmarking entrepreneurs that through the provision of capital, which is priced at whatever level, will actually have a far much bigger success rate because that money comes in as a grant. And when you blend it with whatever is 50% of CIFA's money, it means your blended cost of funding and cost rather is actually far much lower. If you give somebody 5 million, 2.5 million comes in as a grant and 2.5 million as whatever, the blended cost actually is almost, you know, half of that. And I believe that is the way that we are doing it, and we are going to be deploying money. Already the department has allocated 100 million and CIFA has meshed that with another 100, and much more will be coming our way to ensure that we increase the level of success of, you know, SMME. Honorable Tromelang, yes, for every channel of lending, we have got targets. So if you look at slide 17, where we are talking about, you know, the actual lending, the performance, rather operational performance, every channel, direct lending, you know, microfinance, informal and microfinance, wholesale and cooler credit guarantee, each one has got a target. So that when we report that we have overachieved, we do not then leave out others as well. So, for instance, direct lending, slide 17, wholesale, 32, and so on. So we do have targets for each, you know, a channel of lending. 82 access points are not enough. But then we are caught between a rock and a hard place, Honorable Tromelang, in that the partners that we have through the intermediaries like your Pagamani, the Small Enterprise Finance, and many others. When we call those CIFA branches, you are having another moral issue around where, unfortunately, many of our SMMEs that have been funded previously by virtue of us being a government owned, they thought they don't have an obligation to pay that. So, for instance, CIFA has got 97 branches. You could add them to the 82 because they are actually a lending channel. But I think it is also important to note that they are crowding in other private sector capital, so we cannot only use them, but they are used as a channel through which people in the rural areas and other provinces can access, you know, CIFA funding. Through the Land Reform Empowerment Fund as well, Honorable Tromelang, we actually do that through commercial banks. So if we go to APSA, you know, NetBank or whatever, all our applicants can go through whatever branch is closer to them to access, you know, those facilities as well. So those are some of the touch points that we can use. But where we want to claim ownership is where, together with CEDA, MEF, IDC and others, we know that there will be a desk that one can go in and be given the, you know, the help that they are looking for. Direct lending, I think you are spot on. If we need to be effective and efficient, you cannot lend 50,000 to an entrepreneur the same way that you would lend, you know, 5 million rand. And the chairman, when he was making the closing remarks, he mentioned the issue of fintech. We need to be innovative in using technology to make sure that our delivery model on those smaller loans through our direct lending becomes cheaper and more efficient. And this we need to do through a number of things. Through our data analytics, where we use the credit, you know, analysis, and someone online can apply, and within a short space of time, they can know whether they are qualifying for a loan or not. So we are aware of that. Because whether you lend somebody 50,000 or a million, you know, I was saying to them this morning, you still have to book a flight and whatever. So we are aware that we need to use technology so that we can provide loans cheaper, because there is still a funding gap of 250,000 and lower, and we cannot move out of that particular space because that's where many of our people are looking at. So those are some of the strategic, you know, imperatives that we are dealing with in this coming strategy to say how do we ensure that we utilize more of technology to reach our people in becoming efficient as well. The strategy around youth enterprises, the Small Business and Innovation Fund, that is going to be deployed over the MTEP period. You know, the bulk of that money is going towards the 100,000 youth-owned enterprises. And that is what we are going to be doing for the next 3 years. So one will be seen much where we are also together with CEDA going to be what is called Pitch and Perfect, where innovation, innovative ideas, whether it be at ideation, whether it be, you know, at proof of concept, we are going to invite young people to come up with those innovative ideas so that we can take, you know, the issue of the 4IR to the next level. And maybe in closure, to Honorable Langa, just on the female businesses, the CFO will answer the one around the auditors. The 36 million that you were talking to was relating to direct lending on slide, you know, I think slide number 17. But when you look overall, as I mentioned, 99.8% of all what we have actually supported were towards, you know, women-owned businesses. And those are predominantly in your, you know, townships and rural areas through our microfinance enterprises. Lastly, Honorable Jacobs, the issue of the intermediaries, maybe not to repeat what the chair said. Remember, one of our strategic objectives is, as government-owned institutions, is to leverage on the money that we have to crowd in private sector. So if we crowd in private sector money, we need to use strategic partners. For instance, we have got the Anglo-American, you know, CIFA Mining Fund, where CIFA put 100 million and Anglo-American put in 100 million. But what is it that they are adding there is that they have got the knowledge of the sector to adjudicate, to do due diligences on some of the early stage mining projects. And that is the added advantage that we are getting. So all of a sudden, you've got a 200 million fund as an example. So it is important that we continue engaging with them, but it has to be a value add to the resources that CIFA, you know, brings on the table in order to reach and cover as many people as we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Therefore, I'm giving you 3 minutes.
Yes, honorable members, my question is related to the auditors. CIFA is being audited by SMB Citizens Aluva Grant Fountain, and it has not been audited by the AG. We have, though, engaged with the AG previously, and the AG did, at that point in time, say that they did not have adequate resources and skills and competencies at that point to audit CIFA directly. They are, though, involved in terms of the terms of reference, in terms of the appointment when you do go on tender. They are involved in terms of the reference and also the approval of the external audit firm is approved by AG themselves. And they do attend audit committees and they do attend the meeting where they are appointed. At that point in time, it was really on the skills. It is a financing institution, and it is registered in terms of the Companies Act, and because CIFA is registered as a Schedule 2 and not as a Schedule 3A or 3B, there are certain IFRS implications in terms of your international financial reporting standards that it needs to comply with. And at that point in time, that was really the decision that was made.
Clarity, Madam Chair.
Onward.
I would like to know if that audited report will come to the Small Business Development.
We definitely, it's about providing the audit report. That's the clarity that is on. No, we definitely do that. Thank you, Chair.
And we'll come to the end of this session. It's lunchtime. We've taken some few minutes. We are supposed to resume again at 2:45. So, is it lunch ready there? Is it ready?
Yes.
Okay. Can we adjourn for?